And our next, and as it happens, final speaker is David Parnas. David is directs the software engineering program at McMaster University. That is to say, he is a real scientist. As a longtime consultant to the U.S. Department of Defense and its contractors, he was invited to consult for President Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, or Star Wars, program in 1985, and he resigned from the SDI Blue Ribbon Panel when it became apparent that the program's publicly stated goals were not taken seriously by the scientists and engineers involved, who were making false statements to advance their own interests. And I think he's going to continue this story. I think he's going to speak to us today under the title, From the Liars Who Brought You Star Wars. And, of course, I've left to the end Dr. Parnas' most important qualification. He's a former member of, former president of Science for Peace. Thank you.
Before I go into my prepared talk, I have one thought that is stimulated by the last three. We're entering a new century. When we entered the previous century, the United States did not think of itself as a world power. It thought of itself as a very minor player, had very isolationist tendencies. And today, we see other countries who say they're not world powers, but I don't know what it'll be like when we're well into the next century. None of us do. Can I have the first slide, please? Now, I want to begin this talk by saying that I really have nothing new to say. And I think I'm giving this talk because I had a little chance to think about this. I've actually been turning down opportunities to talk about MMD because I thought I had nothing new to say. But when Mel called me, I happened to be abroad and had a little time to think before I talked to him. And I realized that there's something new in saying that I have nothing new to say. And I'll try to show you what I want with me. For those of you who don't know me, and I'm really glad to look around and see so many young faces. I was afraid I'd see all the people I knew only older, but I see a lot of new people here, and that's encouraging. I'm somebody who's had a change of life. I'm also, by the way, part of the brain game. I was born in the evil empire, unlike Sergei. And I came here about 82. But I continued as a consultant for the Defense Department. I never had much second thought about it at that time. And one of the things this has done for me, by the way, is to let me read some of the real documents, not the ones that come out in color, but the real documents that are usually black and white and are classified. And I can tell you they're much more frightening than the ones that Professor Grossman has talked to us about. I can't tell you much more than that, and I haven't read any lately. But the precision and of the planning and the way of thinking is much more frightening than the science fiction that you sometimes read in those colored brochures. Now, I got into this because I was asked, as somebody who had done a lot of consulting on military projects, in fact, somebody who initiated a military project that's still running today, might be the longest scientific project in the U.S. Navy, longest lived one, and to serve on a panel that was supposed to advise the SDIO office on what they should do with their research money. Sounded to me like it would be really challenging. I couldn't really imagine how to tackle a problem like that, and I thought I'd learn. And I sat for 2 days, and then I did a lot of reading and thinking, and I began to hear some of the biggest BS I'd ever heard in my life. And I'll tell you a little more about it. But they asked us at the end of all these presentations of what they were going to do in the discussions that we had, they asked us to write little position papers about what they should fund. And we were told, by the way, that we shouldn't be humble. If we thought they should fund our research, they'd be glad to. That's part of the way this mechanism works that I want to talk about. Well, what happened was I had a little bit of honesty left in me, I guess. And when I tried to write down how to solve this problem, it became very clear to me that one couldn't. And I resigned, but I didn't want to lose my consulting on other weapon systems. At that time, I didn't feel that there was anything wrong there. And so I tried to carefully explain. That means papers no longer than 2 pages each, so military officers could read them. And I wrote 8 little papers to try to explain to them the issues that I saw. These papers have become, and in some ways I regret this, probably my most widely published and translated papers, because I didn't want to be known for what I didn't do, but more for what I did. Anyway, I had this big sense of of deja vu when this thing came up again. So let me tell you a little bit about what happened back then. Could I have the next slide, please? When I wrote those papers, and they very rapidly began to circulate in sort of an underground way, I directed them with my resignation letter to the people that had hired me. I did not broadcast them. But I think they were pretty good papers, and they began to be circulated and eventually landed in the New York Times, and that changed a lot of things. But when I was circulating them and when they were circulating among the defense industry, I began to get some amazing responses. For example, even in those two-day meetings, I pointed out, because of my experience with weapon systems, a major flaw in the simulation they were doing. And the answer I got blew my mind. The guy smiled. He said, yeah, that's the nice thing about this project. There's always more work to do. And then as these papers went around, they began to say things, of course you're right, Dave, but it doesn't matter. They began to try to remind me of something that I already knew, that it was a good way to get money for computer science. And then people would come up with things like, well, we must be able to do something about this problem. Maybe not what they say, but something. And we'll do something useful with the money. One of the companies, which I notice is still up on that chart that Professor Grossman showed, they told me that in our corporation, we don't tell our customers that what they're doing is silly. We just take their contracts. And my letters even got as far, in fact, I sent them there, to the president's science advisor, who I thought would think. And his response was, is to advise the president on how to do what he wants, not to tell him that it can't be done. Now, in all of this, what really amazed me is that in these private conversations, nobody denied the truth of what I said. In fact, they thought it was kind of obvious, and they even called me sophomoric for saying it. What did my colleagues do? If we can have the next slide. Well, basically, they kept taking the contracts. And they made statements to the public over and over again in every forum you could find that there was no problem, that there were no limits to what you could do with software, that they would be able to deploy something useful and within 2 or 3 years to start deployment. They accused me at one point of being somebody who would never work on any weapon system, even though I had been working 15 years on weapon systems. They accused me of being unprofessional at the same time that I won professional responsibility awards. They accused me of being angry because they didn't pick my projects. I hadn't proposed any. They accused me of being out for publicity. Well, maybe I like it, I don't know. But they kept saying they could do it. And all this time, they knew as well as I did that it could never be done. The security being offered by Reagan could never be done. And they knew they were lying to the public. So what happened then? What happened then is that the SDI project went on, but they never got close to doing what they said they could do. And then Clinton came in, and it was publicly announced that he had killed the program. And I remember even getting people congratulating me on my role in killing the program, and I didn't believe it. And sure enough, 1993, I went to a conference and sat at a lunch table, and sitting at that table were a whole bunch of people with SDIO on their badge, even though the SDIO office did not exist anymore. And I said, what are you doing with SDIO on your badge? And they smiled and they said, oh, he said he killed the program, but we just changed its name. It's now called BMD. We report 4 levels down in the Pentagon. And I said, what about the budget? And they said, oh, no contracts have been changed. Everything goes on. And I said, what about the goals? And they smiled and said, nope, all goes on. So what they were talking about then and said with such great confidence that they could do, that technology was completely unworkable. Today is 15 years later, and they still can't do it. And now they're trying to say they're trying to do something different. I'll talk about that a little bit later. What I'd like to do now is to show you something interesting, talk about now. When I resigned, I feel it's always very important as a professional to write down something based on my scientific knowledge, not to just make a broad assertion this can or cannot be done. So I made a list of, eight problem characteristics from a computer point of view, things that made this project much harder than any other. And when I would give talks, I would ask people who were on the other side to try to name another project with all of those characteristics. So, for example, they would say, well, we can build nuclear plant control systems. That's perfectly true. But they don't have to deal with unknown physical properties and deliberate deception. They say, well, we can build telephone networks, but the reliability of those networks is very different, and so forth. I had a list. This is not a computer science lecture, so I'm not going to go down this list. But I listed 8 questions you could ask about a project, and I had the SDI column, showed the answers for SDI. Nobody could list another project that would have those same characteristics. Well, today I can, and it's NMD, right? Has exactly the same characteristics with one slight difference. If you look at this one down here where it says the system is easily overloaded in use, if you believe what they say, that they're only going to have a small capacity to get, say, up to 80 or 90 or 100 missiles, that makes it much more easy to overload in use than the old plan, which was designed to take thousands of missiles. I mean, one of the things that has always occurred to me, if I were on the other side, and I don't mean by this... somebody trying to make it overcome this, if you tell me you have a capacity of 100 missiles, I'm going to make 102. And my 100, the 100 are going to be very inaccurate, because it's not hard to make a missile. It's hard to make an accurate missile. I have 2 accurate ones and say, pick which ones you're going to shoot at. So you know what they're going to do. They're going to be very happy, right? Because they're just going to say, oh, now we need 200, and then 400, and then 600. And this whole project is really for the technological group, Eisenhower's military industrial complex. It's just a little thin out of the wedge. They'll put it in, they'll get some kind of response, they'll say they need more. And as that guy said to me, the guy from RCA, the nice thing about this project is there's always more money to be made. That's not quite his words, but that's what he meant. Can we have the last slide, please? So let me try to tell you why I've chosen to talk today, even though I really have nothing new to say. Right? And that's just to remind you of what's really happened here. We have created Eisenhower's monster. We have created it, and it is so strong it is not in the control of Congress. I have seen this over and over again. When told to stop a project, they rename it and do it some other way. I remember when Carter said there wouldn't be a B-2 bomber, and then Reagan came to office, there was one for him to see. And I've seen other projects that I've been involved with where you got even the admirals to say, stop doing this, and they just change a name and keep going. It's out of control. And I want to point out that it's here in Canada, too. I was thinking, as I listened, you know, I own a very small dog. Now, if you own a small dog, there are 2 things that you'll notice about it. The first is they like to go where the big dogs go. If the big dog is going to raise his leg, the little dog's going to raise his leg. They like to be there. They feel it makes them in good company. The second thing they do, my little dog, he stands up like this and tries to get his nose as high as the big dog's. And pretend that he's a big dog. He's not fooling himself. He's not fooling the others. But he seems to enjoy it. And I see, and I, by the way, I think there is a qualitative difference between the Canadian military and the U.S. military. But in the military-industrial complex, the people who see themselves earning money that way, I don't see that much difference. I wish the positive statements made about my new country by Professor Grossman were true, but that's not what I have seen. There are lots of good, honest people, but the system is sick. And one of the things they do, for example, is whenever they want to get scientists to say something, they go around asking them what they believe and telling them there's money in believing something, and they build up a committee or a commission that will say exactly what they want them to say. Now, what this means to me is that there's a huge number of scientists that we have raised today who are betraying their calling. Science is a search for truth. And they're not searching for truth. They're searching for excuses to get more money. And I can also address the engineers. I'm quite strong about being an engineer as well as a scientist. Engineers have a primary responsibility is always protecting the safety of the public. They're not doing that. It's so obvious that they're not doing that. They have forgotten that. And this is because of the monster that we have created. And what I don't really believe that the NMD is, it's just today's facet of this whole thing. It's really this military-industrial complex, and we ought to be using this history to make the public understand what a monster we have created and how we can't believe a word they say. Because that's the trouble. They come up and they sound credible, but if you remind them of what they said in 1985 and point out that they're saying the same things today, I think we can become educators. This is what I hope will happen, is that you will leave here and think of this as really a teach-in and go out and start teaching by remembering this history from 15, 20 years ago and saying, look what they said then. Why would you believe them now? That's really all I have to say.
David, you were in Iceland or something when I tried to find you, weren't you? But you weren't up there looking for new sites for the National Missile Defense System, I suspect. That's
no,
not what you were doing.
In Iceland, they showed us the place where there's a split between the North American plate and the European plate, and they said they were moving apart 2 centimeters.
Well, these are the tectonic plates.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And they said they're moving apart 2 centimeters a year, and I went there to help push.
One more time to thank all of our speakers who came here today.